Mink, who'd warmed her bed a time or two between his marriages, and his crew had converted it when Simone had gone to Italy. It offered lovely light, plenty of space, and now had a charming little powder room. As she liked to say, Cece was a little bit psychic. She'd imagined Simone working in that space, staying in the rambling house until she found her place. Cece, a little bit psychic, had no doubt where that place was, but the girl had to find it for herself. Meanwhile, whenever Simone came back to Maine, she always came back to Cece. Despite two artistic temperaments, they lived together easily. Each had their own work and their own habits, and they might go for days barely seeing each other. Or they might spend hours sitting together on the patio, biking into the village, walking the narrow strip of sand by the water, or just sitting on the coastline rocks in comfortable silence. After Simone returned from the West, they spent hours with Cece looking through Simone's photos and sketches. Cece borrowed a couple of the photos, a street fair in Santa Fe, a stark shot of buttes in Canyon de Chelly, to use in her own work. When Ward came to visit, Cece slipped away to light candles and incense and meditate, pleased father and daughter were making an effort to reconcile. For 10 days, while the summer people thronged the island, they lived happily enough in their own world, with their art, the water, and cocktails at sunset. Then the storm came. Natalie whirled into the house like a force of nature. Cece, still on her first cup of coffee, she still preferred seeing a sunrise as the last thing before bed instead of the first out of it, blinked owlishly.
"Hi, honey. What flew up your ass?"
"Where is she?"
"I'd offer you coffee, but you seem pretty hyped already. Why don't you sit down? Catch your breath, my cutie."
"I don't want to sit down. Simone! God damn it!" she shouted, raging as she stormed through the house, swirling negative energy Cece already accepted she'd have to white sage away. "Is she upstairs?"
"I wouldn't know," Cece said coolly. "I just got up. And while I'm all for self-expression, you're going to want to watch your tone with me."
"I'm sick of it. Sick of all of it. She can do whatever she wants, whenever she wants, and you're just fine with it. I work my butt off. I graduate in the top 5% of my class. Top 5! And the two of you can hardly be bothered to show up."
Sincerely stunned, Cece lowered her coffee mug.
"Have you lost your mind? We were both there with fucking bells on, young lady. And I can't believe you just pissed me into saying young lady. I sounded like my mother. Simone worked weeks on your gift and..."
"Simone, Simone, si-fucking-moan.
Now you're the X-rated Jan Brady. Get a grip, Natalie."
"What's going on?"
Simone came in a fast trot. "I could hear you yelling all the way up in my studio."
"Your studio. Yours, your, you!"
Natalie whirled, shoved Simone 3 steps back.
"Hold it!"
Stepping forward, Cece snapped out the order.
"There will be no physical violence in my house. Shouting, foul language, fine, but no physical violence. Don't cross my lines."
"What the hell, Natalie?" Shifting, Simone laid a hand on Cece's shoulder.
"Look at you! Always the two of you!"
Face bright pink with fury, blue eyes molten with it, Natalie jabbed out with a finger from each hand.
"I'm sick of that, too! It's not right. It's not fair that you love her more than me."
"First, there's no fair about love. And second, I love you just as much even when you're being a crazy person. In fact, I might love you more when you're being a crazy person. It's an interesting change of pace."
"Just stop it."
Tears spurted, hot with rage.
"It's always been her. She's always been your favorite."
"If you're going to accuse me of things, be specific. Because I can't remember ever slighting you."
"You didn't convert an attic for me."
Close to fed up, Cece gulped down coffee. It didn't help.
"Did you want me to?"
"That's not the point."
"It is the goddamn point. I didn't take Simone to D.C. after her high school graduation and arrange for tours of Congress because she didn't want me to. You did, so I did. Get over yourself.
I can't even come out here anymore because she lives here.
That's on you. And it sure looks like you're here now. And one more thing before I trade this coffee in for the Bloody Mary I now crave. Simone can and will live here as long as she wants. It's not up to you who lives in my fucking house. If you wanted to move in, you'd be welcome, but it's not what you want.
Cece went to the refrigerator. Anybody else want a Bloody Mary? As a matter of fact, Simone began.
There it is, Natalie sneered. Just like Mom says, two peas in a snarky pod.
So what? Simone threw up her hands. So we have things in common. You and Mom have things in common. So what?
You have no respect for my mother. Our mother, Nat the brat, and I certainly do.
Bull. You barely spend any time with her. You didn't even bother to spend any with her on Mother's Day.
I was in New Mexico, for God's sake, Nat. I called her. I sent flowers. Natalie's eyes, the same searing blue as their mother's, burned.
Do you think that means anything? Clicking on some flowers on the internet?
Simone angled her head. You should tell Mom and Dad that, since that's what they've done for every one of my openings.
That's different, and don't try to shift the blame. You don't care about her or any of us, whatever you've convinced Dad to think. They've been arguing because of you. Because of you, Harry and I had a terrible fight on the night of our engagement party.
Jesus Christ. Don't spare the vodka, Simone told Cece.
Believe me.
The two of you, Natalie spat out. All smug out here in your alternate reality, while I live in the real world. A world you barged into, uninvited, looking like something that just stumbled off the trail. But you managed to play up to Harry and Dad, didn't you, playing the victim?
I didn't play up to anyone or play anything. Maybe if you hadn't lied to both of them about contacting me, you wouldn't have had a problem.
I didn't want you there.
It ripped. Ripped a jagged hole in Simone, even though she already knew. Clearly. But you weren't honest about it, and that's not on me.
You're selfish, hateful, and don't care about anyone but yourself.
I might be selfish by your gauge, but I don't have a lot of hate. And if I didn't care about anyone, I wouldn't have stopped off at Mom's and Dad's and ended up embarrassing both of us.
You, on the other hand, you nasty little bitch, are a liar and a coward, and in your real world, you don't take responsibility for being either. Fuck that, Natalie, and you along with it. I'm not going to be your punching bag or Mom's.
Though her heart thudded and her hands wanted to shake, Simone picked up the drink Cece had set on the counter, lifted it in a nasty toasting gesture.
Enjoy your version of reality, Nat. I'll stick with mine.
Tears, fired by rage, fumed in Natalie's eyes.
You disgust me. Do you know that?
I'm fairly astute, so yeah. I picked up on that.
Okay, girls, Cece stepped in. That's enough now.
You always take her side, don't you?
Her own heart aching, Cece forced herself to speak calm and clear.
I've been working hard over here not to take any side, but you're pushing it, Natalie. Now you've blown off considerable steam, so...
I don't mean anything to either of you. You've turned her against me, too.
She shouted at Simone.
I hate you. You're welcome to each other.
She turned to storm out and, blind and bitter, shoved the statue of emergence from the stand Cece had had made for it. Even as Simone cried out in grief, it fell, smashed to the floor. The lovely, serene face, that birth of joy, the face of a lost friend, broke into four pieces.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
The sound, the sight of the destruction slapped Natalie's rage into horrified shock.
I'm sorry. Oh, Simone, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean... You get out.
Simone could barely whisper the words over the wound so deep it screamed inside her. She managed to put the drink in her hand down before she heaved it, because she knew if she struck out, she might never stop.
Simone,
Cece, I'm so, so sorry. I can't...
As Natalie stepped forward, hand out, Simone's head snapped up.
Don't come near me. Don't. Get out. Get out!
With rage and grief choking her, Simone rushed out the back doors before she used fists instead of words. Sobbing, Natalie covered her face with her hands.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Cece. I didn't mean to.
You did mean to. You meant to hurt her and me. Sorry's not going to be enough this time.
When Natalie collapsed into her arms, Cece patted her back for a moment, but then turned and steered her toward the front door.
You need to go, and you need to figure out why you'd do what you've done. Why you said what you said. Feel what you feel. And you have to figure out how to make amends.
I'm sorry. Please.
I'm sure you're sorry. But you destroyed a piece of your sister with a temper tantrum. You broke her heart. And mine.
Don't hate me.
As Cece opened the door, Natalie clung to her.
She hates me. Don't hate me.
I don't hate you, and neither does she. I hate the words I heard coming out of your mouth. I hate what you did because you wanted to hurt us both, and I hate having to say to my own grandchild, and I love you, Natalie, but you can't come back here until you face what you did, until you find a way to make those amends.
She does hate me. She...
You stop.
Snapping it out, Cece pushed Natalie away.
You stop and look inside yourself instead of trying to put things inside someone you refuse to even try to understand. I love you, Natalie, but at this moment I sure as hell don't like you. Go home.
It shattered another piece of her heart, but Cece shut the door of her home in her granddaughter's face. And, leaning back against the door, staring at the beauty, the grace, the joy so recklessly destroyed, she let her own tears come. Accepting them, she went to her other grandchild. Simone sat on the patio stones, knees hugged tight to her chest, her face pressed against her knees as she sobbed. Cece lowered to the patio floor and folded her, rocking until they'd both cried themselves out.
How could she do that? How could she hate me that much?
She doesn't hate you. She's jealous and angry and, God, disdainful. She's her mother's daughter there. But I know, I do. Tulip would never have wanted this. You don't fit the mold, my darling girl, so they see that as an insult. We embarrass them, and that embarrassment makes them feel small, so they retreat into that disdain.
With her arm around Simone, Simone's head on her shoulder, Cece looked out to the water, the deep blues and hints of green, the frisk of its slap against rock.
I could take some of the blame, but what's the point? Cece considered. I did the best I could. Tulip was a happy kid, and then my mother. Well, she's not to blame either. We're who we are, and who we choose to be.
Gently, Cece stroked Simone's hair.
She's devastated, baby. She's so sorry.
Don't take up for her.
Oh, I'm not. She struck out at me, too, and she had no right. It's long past time for her to deal with her inner toddler, to stop blaming you, me, or whatever the hell for her own issues. If she accepts what she did, does whatever she can to make up for it, it could be a turning point for her.
I don't care.
I know, I don't blame you. Families fuck up. Hell, families are fucked up half the time. But fucked up or not, she's always going to be your sister. Always going to be my granddaughter. Forgiveness won't come easy for either of us, and it shouldn't. She'll have to earn it.
I don't know if I can fix it. It's Tish. And I don't know if I can fix it. I don't know if I have it in me to try. And if I do, if I can,
It wouldn't be the same.
You'll fix it. Cece turned to kiss the top of Simone's head. You have it in you. No, it won't be the same. It will say something else, something more. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go in, pick up the pieces, assess the damage. We'll take it up to your studio, and when you're ready, you'll start work on repairing it. In the meantime, we're going to white sage the house and banish all that negative energy.
Okay. But can we just sit here a little longer?
Let's do that. Harry came home from a round of golf feeling pumped. He'd knocked a couple strokes off his previous personal best to start what he had decided would be an excellent day. He had an hour before he was due to pick up Natalie for lunch with friends. Then he intended to surprise his bride-to-be with an early evening showing at a house he thought might suit them both. A house, their house, equaled the next stage. Something they'd find and buy and outfit and finally live in together. The lady wanted a fall wedding? He'd wait. She wanted a big, formal wedding. He got on board the train. But he wanted that next stage. He let himself into his apartment, set his golf clubs by the door. Then he spotted Natalie curled on his living room sofa. His already bright mood went brighter still. Hey, sweets, I didn't... Then he saw the tears, the ravaged face as her arms reached for him. What's wrong? What happened? As he gathered her up, she broke into fresh sobs. Oh, Jesus, is it your parents? Your grandmother? She shook her head fiercely.
Oh, Harry, I did something terrible.
That's hard to believe.
Shh, don't cry.
He dug out a handkerchief. His mother had trained him to carry one at all times. Dabbed at her face.
Did you rob a bank? Kick a puppy?
I went to see Simone.
Okay, I'm guessing that didn't go well.
She hates me, Harry. Cece hates me, too.
They don't.
You don't know. You don't understand. Simone's always been Cece's favorite. She dotes on her. Peas in a pod, just like Mom says, and I get whatever's left.
If that's true, there must be a lot left. Because every time I've seen you with your grandmother, I've seen how much she loves you. How proud she is of you. I don't see any hate.
They do hate me. If they didn't before, they do now after what happened.
What happened?
I didn't mean to do it.
Gripping his shirt, she burrowed against him.
I was just so mad, and Simone was saying awful, awful things to me. And Cece's making them goddamn Bloody Marys, and I could just feel her laughing at me. I just lost my temper.
God, Natalie, you didn't hit your sister, did you?
No, I just lost my temper, and I pushed it over, and it broke. I didn't mean to do it, and I was so sorry, but they wouldn't listen.
Pushed what?
The statue. The bust of the woman.
Sick all over again, Natalie pressed the heels of her hands to her eyes.
Simone's statue from that damn show in Florence. Cece bought it, was always showing it off. I just shoved it, and it fell, and it broke. And after, like a second after, it was like someone else had done it. I was so shocked and sorry, and I tried to tell them. They wouldn't listen.
The woman coming out of the pool?
He'd seen it, admired it.
The one in Cece's great room?
Yes, yes, yes. I just lost my temper. They ganged up on me, and I lost my temper, and then they wouldn't let me apologize.
He pushed off the sofa to walk to the window. He could see the piece in his head, remembered that when he'd admired it, how Cece had told him about the show, about how she'd felt when she'd seen it.
Natalie, you knew what that piece meant to your grandmother, and to your sister.
It was just there, and I didn't mean it.
He came back, sat again, took her hand.
Natalie, I know you, and I know you're not telling me the whole story.
You're taking her side!
She tried to pull her hand free, but he held tight.
I'm listening to your side, but don't shade the truth.
I didn't come here to fight with you. I didn't come here to fight with you over Simone again.
We didn't fight over Simone. We fought because you hadn't told me the truth. You told me your sister couldn't make it home for the party, that she was too busy. You let me think you'd told her and she'd said she couldn't come.
She was out west somewhere, so I assumed...
We're lawyers, he interrupted. We both know how to use half-truths and semantics. Don't use them on me. What happened today?
Genuinely terrified, she gripped his shirt again.
Don't turn on me, Harry. I couldn't stand it if you turned on me.
Now he cupped her face with his hands.
That's never going to happen. But we're going to be straight with each other. Honest with each other.
My parents... My mother's upset because my father's gone over to the island twice since the party.
Your mother's upset because your father's spent some time with your sister?
You don't understand! You don't understand! Simone's just full of disdain where my mother's concerned, and she's ungrateful! After all they did for her, she dropped out of college, ran off to Europe!
He'd heard all this before and tried to be patient.
Which sounds like it was the right decision for her. And if there's an issue, it's between your mother and your sister. It's not your issue, Natalie.
I love my mother!
Of course you do. So do I.
He smiled, kissed her lightly.
Peas in a pod. Did you go to see her, to talk, or to fight?
I'm a lawyer, she tossed back. I went to talk, and then she...
His gaze held hers patiently. Love for him tangled up with guilt.
That's not true. It was when I left home, but by the time I got to the island, to Cece's, I was furious. I started it. Oh, God, Harry, I'm a terrible person.
Don't say that about the woman I love.
He gathered her up for a minute, loving her as much for her flaws as for her perfection. Just loving her.
Sit for a minute, sweets. I'm going to cancel our lunch plans.
And the showing, he thought.
I forgot all about it.
We'll reschedule. Then I'm going to pour us both some wine, and you're going to talk this through with me. We'll figure it out, sweets.
I love you, Harry. I really love you.
She clung to him, a port in a storm.
You're the best thing that ever happened to me.
Right back at you.
I want it to be all her fault. I want to stay mad at her. It's easier.
I'm looking at your beautiful face and those tears. So I don't think it's easier.
Cece set up her easel on the patio. Summer would fade before she knew it, so she counted every day of it as precious. She wouldn't paint the view, but would continue to work on the study from one of Simone's photos. The woman in the red hat, the wide, flat brim over a face lined with time and sun, perusing a bin of tomatoes at a street fair, with the wizened old man in the stall smiling at her. In her version, the tomatoes became magic eggs, bold as jewels, and the bird perched on the striped awning a winged dragon. She'd played with the tones, the feel, the message for a week. Just as Simone had spent the week in focused, meticulous repair of the bust. Cece wished them both blessings on their work, lit a candle for each of them, and began to mix paints. She called out a, "Come in!" at the ring of her doorbell. She rarely locked the door, and this was one good reason. Whoever came calling could just come in rather than making her stop and go answer.
I'm out here.
Cece.
Unsure whether to be relieved or wary at the sound of Natalie's voice, Cece set aside her paints, turned. The girl looked penitent, she decided, and full of nerves, with her hand gripping the boy Cece thought of as Handsome Harry.
Since you've always been a rule follower, I'm going to believe you've decided to take responsibility and figured out how to make amends.
I'm taking responsibility. I'm going to try to make amends. I don't know if I can, but I want to try. I'm so ashamed, Cece, for what I said that day, for what I did.
There are a lot of things I need to say to Simone, and I hope she'll listen. But I need to tell you, I knew how much that piece meant to you. I knew it represented a bond between you and Simone. I broke it because I don't share that bond, and that's unforgivable.
I decide what I can forgive.
I think making amends to you starts with trying to make them to Simone. To try to do that, I have to say things to her.
Then you should do that. She's up in her studio.
With a nod, Natalie released Harry's hand.
You've never been anything but wonderful to me, and I'm ashamed of what I said to you. You've never once let me down, ever. Even when I deserved it.
Long walk for her,
Cece murmured when Natalie went inside.
Yeah, it is. We interrupted your work. I can wait out. Don't be silly. I can't work wondering if I'll hear screaming, shouting, and cursing. Let's have a beer. I could use one.
Cece stepped up to the doorway, reached up to pat his cheek.
You're good for her, Harry. I wasn't sure of it, but you're good for her.
I love her.
Love's the glue. Use it right. It can fix most anything.
Simone used glue, metal pins, sandpaper, paints. After a week of intense work, she began to believe she could bring Tish back. She could bring the life back into the face. She heard the footsteps as she pushed back to study the morning's progress.
Come see. I think maybe.
Then she looked up, saw Natalie. Slowly, she got to her feet. You're not welcome here.
I know. I'm asking for 5 minutes. Please. There's nothing. Oh, God! You fixed it!
Don't you dare. Natalie stopped her rush forward to the work table, gripped her hands behind her back.
There's nothing you can say to me I don't deserve. Being sorry, ashamed, disgusted with myself isn't enough. Knowing you've fixed what I tried to ruin doesn't let me off the hook.
She isn't fixed.
But it... She's so beautiful, Simone. I resented that. Resented what you can create out of freaking mud. I'm ashamed of that. I can't even explain how ashamed. I didn't tell you about the engagement, the party, because I didn't want you to come. I told myself you wouldn't anyway. It wouldn't matter to you. I was only going to have you in the wedding party because people would think poorly of me otherwise. I let myself think and feel terrible things about you.
Why?
You left me. It felt like you left me. After the mall...
She broke off when Simone's face went blank, when she turned away.
Like that! You wouldn't talk about it with me.
I talked about it in therapy. I talked about it to the police. Over and over.
You wouldn't talk to me, and I needed my big sister. I was so scared. I'd wake up screaming, but you...
I had nightmares, Nat. Cold sweats, gasping for air.
No screams, so Mom didn't rush in, but I had nightmares.
Staring, Natalie brushed tears from her cheek.
You never said. I didn't want to talk about it then. I don't want to talk about it now. I put it away. You put me away.
Oh, bullshit. Simone whirled back.
Bullshit. It's not. It doesn't feel like bullshit, Simone, not to me. Before, you included me. It was you and me and Tish, but you included me. They were my friends, too. After, you shut me out. It was just you and me.
Jesus Christ. Tish died. Me was in the hospital for weeks.
I know. I was 14, Sim. Please, God, have some pity. I thought she was dead. When I dragged Mom behind that counter, I thought she was dead. I thought you were dead. Then you weren't, and I kept dreaming you were. Everybody but me. Tish was my friend, too. And me. And all I saw was me being replaced as a sister. I know how stupid and selfish that sounds. The two of you came here when me got out of the hospital, to Cece. And all I could think was, why did they leave me behind?
She needed me, and I needed... Natalie hadn't been hurt, Simone thought. But of course she had. Of course she had. I didn't think, Simone managed. I didn't think of it as leaving you out or behind. I just needed to get away from it. The reporters, the police, the talk, the looks. I was 16, Natalie, and broken inside. It was always me after that. You had each other. I was broken, too. I'm sorry. Simone dropped back on her stool, rubbed her hands over her face. I'm sorry. I didn't see it. Maybe I didn't want to see it. You had Mom and Dad, Cece, friends of your own. You got so involved in school and projects. It helped me stop thinking. It helped stop the nightmares. But I wanted you, Simone. I was too mad to tell you. Not mad, she corrected. More sorry for myself. Then you went to New York, to college. With me. You started dyeing your hair weird colors, wearing clothes Mom just hated. So I hated them too. I wanted my sister back, but I wanted you back the way I wanted you. You weren't the way I wanted you or I thought you should be. Then you sort of were, and I didn't like you. Finally, Natalie sat, let out a breath that ended with a baffled laugh. I just realized that. I didn't like the Simone who wore business suits and dated that... What was his name? Gerald Wirth, the freaking fourth. Oh, yeah. Natalie sniffled. He was kind of a jerk, but he didn't mean to be. I didn't like you that way. Or the other way because you weren't the big sister I had before the world changed for us. Then you dropped out of college and went back to New York. Then you went off to Italy and I didn't know who the hell you were. You hardly came home. The welcome wasn't exactly warm there. You don't put much effort into it either. Maybe not, Simone replied. Maybe not. Everything I said last week, I felt. I believed. I was wrong, but I felt it sincerely. I was wrong to expect you to, I don't know, freeze in place from before, when we all changed that night. I was so, so wrong to say those things to Cece, who's the most loving and amazing person in the world, and I'll never stop being ashamed of that. She wouldn't want you to be ashamed forever. I know. Another reason for the shame. I'm here because of Harry. Because he makes me a better person.
Those blue eyes teared up again.
He makes me want to be a better person. You've been selfish, Simone. So have I. But this is who you are and who I am. I'm going to try to be a better person, the one Harry sees when he looks at me. I'm going to try to be a better sister. It's the only way I know how to make amends for what I did.
I don't know if we'd be any different from who we are, but I'm sorry. I am sorry I wasn't there for you, that I didn't see I wasn't there. We can try starting from here, with who we are now.
Yeah. Yes.
Tears swirling, Natalie got to her feet, stepped forward. Her gaze fell on the bust, and she saw what she hadn't before.
It's Tish.
Yes. Her hand flew up to her mouth, clamped there. More tears now, spilling over her fingers.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. It's Tish. I never really looked. I didn't want to.
Shuddering, Natalie lowered her hand, and as Simone rose, she saw deep grief.
It's Tish. You made something beautiful, and I... You had to feel as if she died again. Oh, Simone.
Yes, I did. But she came around the work table, felt herself able and more willing to pull Natalie to her.
I did. But I can bring her back. I can bring her back,
she said, with her eyes on the clay.
This time. This way.
Part 2. Passion of Purpose. Wealth lost, something lost. Honor lost, something lost. Courage lost, all lost. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Chapter 11. Reed sat with Chaz Bergman on the rocks, watching the moonbeam light over the bay. They each had a bottle of summer pale ale, a technical violation. But at 2 in the morning, on the lonely stretch of coastline, Reed figured nobody cared. Though Chaz had moved to Seattle for a job right out of college, they hadn't lost touch and kept up sporadically through texts and emails. Face-to-face time tended to be limited to Chaz's return for Christmas and the occasional long summer weekend.
"Sorry I couldn't make it earlier," Reed said as they settled in. "Cop shit?" "Yeah." "You get the bad guy?"
With a nod, Reed took his first long drink.
"Look 'em, Dano. Detective Quartermain. It still slays me. Supreme IT nerd Chaz Bergman. Doesn't surprise me a bit."
Reed took another pull from the bottle, let the long day go.
"I didn't expect to see you again this summer. You were just here in July."
"Yeah." Chaz took a slower, smaller sip, nudged his glasses up on his nose. He'd kept his husky build, but put on some muscle. He had a lot more hair now, enough that he tied it back in a stub of a tail. He'd added a weird little soul patch that didn't disguise the geek. Chaz looked out at the water, shrugged.
"My mom really wanted me to fly in for that McMullen deal. I guess part of me wanted to. Not to talk about it so much, but to see some of the people who were in the store that night."
"That kid," Reed remembered. "He was like 12, and now he's working on being a doctor."
"Yeah, and the pregnant woman. She's got those twins."
"You saved them, bro."
Reed tapped his bottle to Chaz's.
"I guess. Speaking of, how's Brady Foster?"
"He's great. Batted 340 on his high school team last year. They had another kid, you know, Lisa and Michael."
"Yeah, that's right. You told me."
"A girl. She's 5. Camille. She's crazy smart. Looks like her mom. I tell you, Chaz, Lisa's amazing. She lives with that night every day, but she doesn't let it, you know, define her. It sure as hell doesn't stop her. I guess I look at that family and what that night cost them, and how they didn't just survive it. They didn't even just overcome it. They shine, you know? Like that damn moon up there. I never asked you, but do you ever go back there? To the mall?"
"Yeah."
He'd drawn maps, marked points of attack, victims, movements, numbers. He had it all in his files.
"It's changed a lot. I can't go in there. I don't even like driving by. I never told you, but I took the job in Seattle because it was the farthest away I could get and stay in the country. Well, the mainland, and I didn't get offers from Alaska or Hawaii. It's a great job, a good company,"
Chaz added.
"But it was the distance."
"Nothing wrong with that,"
Reed said after a moment.
"I don't think about it for weeks, months. But I come back here and it hits me all over again. Weird. Because I was in a locked, crowded room for the worst of it, not in the thick like you. Jesus, we were just kids, Reed."
Chaz took a longer drink.
"Or I'll hear about another mass shooting and it all flashes back."
"I hear that."
"I go to Seattle and you go to the front line. You took a job, man. You built a career." "Yeah, about that. The reason I'm back? I'm taking a transfer to New York. Taking a little downtime first, heading down to check out some apartments the company's got lined up."
Chaz shrugged.
"They want me to head up the cybersecurity division there."
"Headed? Holy shit, Chaz."
Reed gave him a congratulatory elbow in the ribs.
"You're a fucking honcho, nerd."
It made him smile, but Chaz shook his head, shoved his glasses back up on his nose.
"I almost turned it down. New York's a lot closer than Seattle, but I can't let that damn night, that damn mall, what did you call it? Define my damn life. So I'm moving to New York in November."
"Congratulations, man, all around.
How do you do it? I mean the badge and the gun and putting it on the line every fucking day. Detective work's mostly detecting, and a boatload of paperwork, legwork. It's not like TV. It's not car chases and shootouts. You're going to tell me you've never been in either one? Some car chases. More foot chases. And why do they run? But some car chases. They're crazy, I'll give you that. Shootouts? It's not like the OK Corral, Chaz.
Chaz just looked at him, those quiet eyes behind the thick lenses.
I've been involved a couple of times when we had shots fired. Were you scared? Bet your hairy white ass.
But you did it anyway, and you keep doing it. See, that's the thing about you, Reed. You face up and do it anyway, and you always have. New York's not facing down some asshole with a gun, but it's sort of my do it anyway.
Chaz paused, smiled.
With a promotion and a big fat raise. Lucky bastard. I bet you've got the rest of a six-pack and a cooler in that rental car.
Eagle Scout, we're always prepared. But I'm driving, so one's it.
So let's take it back to my place, polish it off. Tomorrow, well, today now, Sunday, and I'm not on the roll. You can sleep on the couch.
I could do that. Why are you still living in that dump?
It's not so bad. And there's talk about some gentrification in the neighborhood. I could be sitting sweet before you know it. Anyway, I might not be there much longer. I'm looking at a house tomorrow afternoon. It feels like the one from the outside in the video tour. Nice yard, new kitchen.
You don't cook.
Doesn't matter. Excellent master suite and so on. I like the neighborhood. I can walk to pubs and restaurants, mow my own grass. Best, if I can whittle the price down just a couple clicks, I can afford it without selling my blood or taking bribes.
You could sell your sperm, Chaz suggested. Remember that guy, Fruwensky, who did that in college?
I think I'll try my hand at negotiation first. Anyway,
he said as they rose,
you ought to come with me tomorrow, check the place out.
I gotta go see my grandparents. Already on the books. Then Monday, I'm heading to New York to check out my own digs.
Then let's go make the best of what's left of the six-pack.
Reed slept till noon, then threw together some coffee and scrambled eggs since he had company. He saw Chaz off with the promise of a wild New York weekend once his old friend settled in. When he showered, in lukewarm water as apparently the building's hot water heater was dying again, he thought how good it had been to spend time with Chaz, and talk about things he realized Chaz had avoided talking about. He dressed, studying his bedroom wall, the one he used as a makeshift case board. He had tacked up photos of every Down East Mall survivor who died, with the death designation above each group. Accidental, natural causes, homicide, suicide. He had maps with each of the deceased's location when they died, pinned with a name, date, time. And he cross-checked each along with their reported locations and any injuries incurred on the night of July 22, 2005. Too many, he thought again. Just too many. He couldn't argue with Essie's debate point on the variety of weapons and methods in the homicides, but he knew there was a pattern in there. One that just hadn't come clear for him yet. He had autopsy reports, witness statements, copies of interviews with next of kin. He'd compiled articles and recordings from a dozen years back right up to the McMullen special. It had surprised him to see Hobart's sister on there. Patricia Hobart, pale, hollow-eyed, looked older than 26. Then, he guessed, having your brother murder a bunch of people, your mother blow up her house under the influence of drugs and alcohol, as the ME report stated, having your asshole father drink himself drunk and kill a woman and her kid along with himself, rated premature aging. She hadn't cried, Reed recalled as he studied her picture on the wall. Plenty of nervous tics, though. Hunched shoulders, fingers twisting together or pulling at her clothes. Dumpy suit, he remembered. Ugly shoes. Lived with her grandparents, stood as main caregiver for her grandmother, who'd used a walker since recovering after a broken hip, and her grandfather, who'd suffered two small strokes. Paternal grandparents, really well off, who'd disinherited the asshole father and uncle, who'd had their shitload of guns available for a trio of fucked-up teenagers to take, to use, to kill what came to be 93 people in the space of minutes. What a fucking family, he thought, strapping on his off-duty weapon, shoving his wallet, ID, and phone in his pockets. On the way out, he pulled out his phone, called Essie. An actual call, because she might ignore a text. He jogged down the steps as she answered.
I'm heading to the house I told you about, meeting Realtor Renee. Come on and see it with me. Bring the gang.
It's a hot, lazy afternoon, Reed.
That's why it's perfect. We'll go to the park after. The dog and kid can run around. And I'll take you all for pizza to celebrate me making an offer. I really think this is the one.
You said that with that weird Victorian 3 months ago.
I liked the weird Victorian, but it had a bad vibe when we walked through it.
Yeah, vibe bad. You're a house shopping addict, Reed.
Since it might be true, he evaded. It'll be fun. This one's only a few blocks from your place.
It's over half a mile.
A nice Sunday stroll, right? Then the park. Pizza. I'll spring for a bottle of wine.
That's so unfair. He laughed.
Come on. I need somebody to talk me out of it if it's wrong, or into it if it's right. The damn water heater's on the death watch here again. I really do have to get out of this place.
He knew by the long, windy sigh he had her. What time's your appointment?
2. I'm heading there now.
Puck and Dylan could use the walk and the runaround time. Hank and I could use the wine. I've got to get it together first. Don't make a damn offer until we get there.
You got it. Thanks. See ya.
He glanced back at the building. Someone who couldn't spell had added some fresh graffiti, advising somebody else to fuck a duke. He assumed they meant duck, but maybe they knew somebody named Duke. Maybe they wanted to fuck an aristocrat or something. In any case, it was just another sign his time there had to end. Still, a decent coffee shop had opened up a couple blocks away, and somebody had bought one of the neighboring buildings with big talk of rehab and spiffy condos. Gentrification could happen. Another reason to get out. He'd appreciate seeing the neighborhood cleaned up, spruced up, but he didn't want to live out his life in a condo. As he drove, he imagined setting up a grill on his new back deck. He knew how to grill. Sort of. Maybe he'd even learn how to cook something besides scrambled eggs and grilled cheese and bacon sandwiches. Maybe. He'd have parties with the grill smoking, or in the great room in the winter with the gas fireplace going. Keep one of the 3 bedrooms as a guest room, turn the other into what would be his first ever actual home office. Buy a big, and he did mean big-ass flat screen for the wall, and sign up for every fucking sports channel on cable. That's what I'm talking about, he decided, as he cruised into what he had determined would be his new neighborhood. Older homes, sure, but he didn't mind older. Most had been remodeled with the ever-popular open concept, the snazzy bathrooms and kitchens. Lots of families, and he didn't mind that either. Maybe he'd come across some sexy single mom. He liked kids. Kids were no problem. He pulled up into the drive of the sturdy 2-story brick, thought how much he'd liked the unabashed weirdness of the Victorian over this, more traditional. But sturdy was good. Sturdy was fine. And the owners had definitely put some effort into curb appeal with the plants, shrubs, the new doors on the garage. He could use a garage. As he got out, he glanced at the car already parked there. Not Renee's, his extremely patient realtor. Curious, he noted the license plate, pure habit, as he crossed what he told himself would be his brick walkway. The woman opened the door before he pressed the, his, doorbell.
Hi! Reed, right?
The attractive blonde in the tailored red shirt and white pants held out her hand.
I'm Maxie! Maxie Walters.
Okay. I'm supposed to meet Renee.
Yes, she called me. She had a family emergency. Her mother had a little fender bender. Nothing serious, she said quickly. But you know moms. Renee's going to try to get here, but she didn't want you to have to delay or postpone. Especially when we got the inside scoop that sellers are cutting the price $5,000 tomorrow.
That doesn't hurt a thing.
He stepped inside, scanned the high-ceilinged foyer he'd admired on the video tour.
I've just been familiarizing myself with the property. It does have some lovely features. Original hardwood floors, and I think they did a terrific job refinishing them. And don't you love the open feel of the entrance?
She continued as she gestured him ahead, closed the door.
Yeah, the house has a good feel.
He wandered the living room. Staged well, he thought, as he'd seen every level of staging, and imagined that big-ass screen on the wall. He liked the sightline, straight back to the kitchen with the wide breakfast counter and the dining area, to the wide sliders that opened onto the back deck he wanted for his own.
So you work with Renee?
He didn't know why he asked. He knew everyone who worked with Renee. He turned toward her. Blonde and blue, mid-20s, about 5'4 and 115. Good muscle tone.
We're friends, she said as she led the way toward the kitchen. Actually, she's been my mentor. I only got my license 3 months ago. Granite countertops, she added. The appliances are new. Not stainless, but I think the clean white suits the space.
Her voice, he thought. Something about her voice.
He stopped on his way to that beckoning deck, turned with a breakfast bar between them. Do you cook, Reed?
Not really.
He thought the flirty smile she sent him just didn't fit the space between her nose and chin.
She stepped up to the counter. You're a police detective. That must be exciting. Not married, though?
No.
It's a great house for a family when you start one.
She shifted. He couldn't see her hands, but her body language. Every instinct went on alert. The eyes, the hair, even the shape of the mouth with that slight overbite were all different. But the voice. It clicked just an instant too late. She'd already brought up the gun. He dived for cover, but she caught him twice, in the side, in the shoulder. He hit the refinished hardwood behind the granite breakfast counter hard, with stupefying pain exploding through his body.
Some cop!
With a laugh, she strolled around the counter to finish him off with one to the head.
You did a better job protecting some idiot kid way back when than protecting yourself now.
Say goodbye, hero.
He saw her face change from eager to shocked. Now he had his gun out. He fired three times, forced to use his left hand as his right couldn't hold his weapon. He heard her scream, thought he hit her, thought at least one shot hit before she used the counter to block. Before he heard her running for the front door.
You motherfucker!
She screamed it as she ran. He had to drag himself across the floor, brace the weapon as he cleared the counter. She'd left the door open. He heard the sound of a car starting, tires squealing. She could come back, he thought. If she came back... Teeth gritted, he pushed himself to sit, back to the counter, gasping against the pain as he fought for his phone. He passed out, felt himself fade. He didn't know how long. Struggling to breathe against the pain, he pulled out his phone. He started to hit 911, then thought of Essie and her family. She answered on the second ring.
We're coming! 5 minutes!
No. No, don't. Stay back. I'm shot. I'm shot.
What?
Reed! Need ambulance. Need backup. Fuck me. Passing out again. Need Bolo.
Reed! Reed! Hank, stay here. Stay with Dylan.
Essie? What?
But she was running, the phone in her hand and her weapon in the other.
Officer down! Officer down!
She shouted into the phone. Hank picked up his son, gripped Puck's leash, and prayed. She made the last quarter mile in under 2 minutes, running full out while people working in their yards stopped to gape.
Police officer, go inside! Go inside!
She didn't stop running until she hit the porch of the brick house. Weapon out, she cleared the doorway, swept her weapon toward the stairs leading up, then over. and saw Reed.
Please, please, please.
She checked his pulse first, then leaped up to grab cloth napkins artfully folded on the set-for-company dining room table. When she patted them, put pressure on the wound in his side, the fresh pain shot him to the surface.
Shot!
And in shock, she thought.
Yeah, you're going to be all right. Be still. An ambulance is coming. Backup's coming. She could come back. Need my weapon.
Who? Who is she? No, 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 stay with me. You stay with me. Who did this?
Hobart. The sister. Oh, fuck, fuck, fuck. Patricia Hobart. Driving.
You stay awake. Look at me. You stay with me, goddammit.
Driving a late model Honda Civic. White. Main plates. Shit. Shit, I can't.
You can. Hear that? Hear the sirens? Help's coming. And her hands were wet with his blood.
She couldn't stop the blood. Plates. The stupid lobster.
He gasped it out, fighting to stay with her. To stay alive.
4, 7, 5. Charlie Bravo. Romeo.
Good. Good, that's real good. In here. In here.
Hurry, goddammit, he's bleeding. I can't stop the bleeding.
The EMTs pushed her aside, laid Reed flat, got to work. Cops, weapons drawn, rushed in behind them. She held up her left hand, felt Reed's blood slide down her wrist.
I'm a cop. We're cops. Detective McVee, it's Bull. Jesus Christ, that's Reed. Who the fuck did this?
The assailant is Hobart Patricia, mid-20s, brown hair, brown eyes. She's driving, or was, a late-model white Honda Civic, main lobster plates, 475 Charlie Bravo Romeo. Get it out. I don't know her address, lives with grandparents. Get it out. Get that bitch.
Detective, one of the officers said, there's some blood leading out. She could be hit.
She looked back at Reed and dearly hoped so.
Alert hospitals and clinics. Two of you clear the house and let's move. Let's move!
Patricia moved. And fast. The son of a bitch shot her. She couldn't believe it. She hoped he died screaming. She couldn't stop to check, but the bullet had gone in just under her left armpit. And she thought, hoped, right out again. A through and through, they called it, she remembered as she blinked away tears of pain and fury. If he lived long enough, the bastard would identify her. Plus, she knew she'd bled on the way out, and that meant DNA. She pounded a fist on the steering wheel of the stolen car as she pulled into the sweep of her grandparents' driveway. She needed her cash, her fake IDs, some weapons, her go bag. She'd have to leave the stolen car behind, just take her own until she could ditch it. She'd planned for this, she thought. She'd planned for it. She just hadn't expected to hit the road with a bullet wound. She raced into the house, up the stairs. It should have gone perfectly, she told herself. She'd cultivated the asshole cop's realtor, going through some of the same houses he had. Had drinks, girlfriends, with the clueless bitch. And she'd been right there, sipping hard lemonade, when the should-be dead guy contacted dumbass Renee about the house. Simple after that. Go over Sunday morning, get the code for the lockbox, and then kill stupid Renee. Take her files on the house, and so on. Then just wait. But he'd made her. How the hell had he done that? She let out a weeping whine as she doused the hole under her armpit with peroxide. Patted it. She'd felt it, just in the set of his body, the way he'd studied her face. He was probably dead, she assured herself as she pulled on a fresh shirt, pulled out her go bag, dumped more cash, more IDs into it. She'd have made sure of it. She knew he'd be carrying off-duty weapons. She wasn't a moron. But she'd hit him twice, right side, right shoulder. How the hell could she be expected to know he'd managed to get his gun out and shoot with his left hand? How the hell could she know that? She took two more handguns, her combat knives, a handmade garrote, plenty of ammo, even took the time to grab another wig, some more facial appliances, some contacts, more bandages, and some of the pain pills she'd culled from her grandparents' supply. It seriously pissed her off she wouldn't cash in on the sale of the house. The life insurance policy.